2022-49C, City of Warwick, gasoline, sulfur, diesel fuel. Chief?
Jason Umbanour, Assistant Chief of the Fire Department. This is the fire department's portion of the same bid for ultra-low sulfur diesel. The fire department only uses item number four, which is the ultra-low sulfur diesel. We're recommending Dennis K. Burke as the lowest bidder. This funding will come from our diesel fuel fund, which is 35-221, same budget expiration, 4/9/2020. Is the current bid expiring? It'll be 4/10/2020 through 4/9/2021 for an amount not to exceed $148,000.
So, you use diesel fuel too, right?
Just diesel fuel.
Just diesel fuel.
The only one we use, yes. We use gasoline, but we get back charged from the police department for that.
So, why did you change the code?
We, last year at budget time, we split diesel fuel and gasoline into two different codes. Last year, just for transparency, to see how much we are spending in diesel versus gasoline. Not combining them together, as there was just one fuel last time, it was just called diesel fuel, although gasoline and diesel fuel were coming out of that same budget code. So last year, we had split it into 220 and 221, just so we could see what the difference of the two is.
So, you're saying now you use just diesel fuel?
We use both. So we use diesel fuel. We have five 1,000-gallon tanks that supplies diesel fuel to our apparatus. And we have the smaller administrative vehicles that use gasoline, but we use the police department pump, and they back charge us for theirs.
But this $148,000 is only for diesel fuel?
Just the diesel fuel side, correct.
How many tanks and how many locations do you have in the city? Does the fire department have?
Five 1,000-gallon tanks.
Where? All in the same spot, or?
Nope, they're all over the city. One's at Station 2, up on Post, 770 Post Road, up near the Walmart. Station 3, next to Vets High School, 6 in Connecticut. Station 9 in Commonwealth, behind CCRI, and Station 10 in Potawatomi.
And what's the largest tank that you have?
They're all 1,000.
All 1,000, diesel and gas, they're all 1,000?
Nope, just diesel. We use the gasoline, we use the police department's tank, right behind our headquarters.
Okay. And right now, on your, never mind, that's the gasoline item. So this is a brand-new code you're just doing this year, brand-new. So you're gonna break out the gas and the diesel separate?
Correct.
So you're looking for $148,000 in diesel?
Correct.
And how much you gonna be looking for on gas?
We're not gonna look for gasoline. We just get, the police department is part of their bid, includes our gasoline, because it comes out of their tank, because they fill their tank. And they, when we fill up at their tank, they back charge our department for the use of the gasoline. So whatever the current rate is for the gasoline, they charge us that rate for how many gallons we use from their tank.
And you get an invoice, and who pays it?
We don't get invoice, we get back charged. It's basically a balance transfer from the police department.
And how does that show? How is that tracked?
If you look in the gasoline line item, almost all of our gasoline line items will be WPD back charged, WPD back charged. And every month, they send us how many gallons we use, what cars use, how many gallons, the total gallons used, the average cost, and then they give us a number of what it is. And then finance transfers that money from our account into their account.
So the $320,000 that the police department just asked us for gasoline only, that includes gas for the fire department?
That's correct.
And the gas for the fire department, you're not using gas in the ladder trucks, the tankers, rescues?
No, the two battalion chief's cars and then the administrative cars, so fire prevention, and the, you know, all the administrative cars that the chiefs use. It's probably about $1,000 to $1,200 a month is, I think, what we get back charged. That's the average.
So in the fiscal year 2019, you had a budget of $170,000.
Correct.
And then there was a transfer in of $15,438.22 for a total budget of $185,438, right?
I don't have that number. I don't have that in front of me, but I would assume that's maybe back charges that were pending from the prior year. But I'm not. I am not positive. I'm not looking at that right now.
No, it's not back charges.
I don't know.
Money transferred into your code 35220, which is what your old code was for gasoline. That was gasoline and diesel, from what I'm gathering in this conversation now. And the transfer of $15,438 brought it up to $185,000. What? See again the same complication. Is with your department from the April thing, you know, trying to compare it to the fiscal year thing and get a grip on what the budget is and how much you're using or how much you're not using. It's just very difficult the way this is. Chief, I know that you haven't been in this particular position for a very long length of time, but while we're on the subject of that transfer, I assume you're aware that we've passed here a city ordinance several years ago that requires the city council to be notified in a very brief period of time when a transfer is made. You're aware of that, right?
I'm aware, yes.
Okay.
I can look into that when I get into the office tomorrow, and I can send you an email if you want and investigate what that transfer was and what exactly happened. I can look into that.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Do we have any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, I need a motion.
Move for favorable action.
We have a motion, I'll second it. We have a motion, we have a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. 2020-251, Healthcare Dependent Eligibility Audit, found on page 53.
Good evening, Council.
Good evening.
Good evening. Jean Bouchard, Personnel.
Jean, could you just stay real close to that mic?
I will.
It's difficult to hear.
The city went out to bid for a Healthcare Dependent Eligibility Audit. This is a new bid, and the RFP is to contract a healthcare consultant to perform an audit on all employees and retirees to obtain information about any ineligible dependent participants on the city's healthcare plan. You've received a detailed letter about what the audit consists of, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
So what you're doing is you're going to be doing an analysis of all the employees in the city. Does that include the school department as well?
No, it does not.
So it's?
It's strictly the city's employees and retirees. Anyone that has health care with the city now.
Okay. Which I happen to think is a good proactive move. I know we've had conversation about this before with respect to the reliability of the numbers that we're getting from whomever the healthcare providers are, and are we being charged the right amounts, family versus single. I know we had those discussions several times over the past couple of years, and it's good to see that coming to fruition. You say that the average eligibility audit achieves a minimum 2% of ineligible dependents, which should produce a savings to the city that exceeds the cost of the contract. So what is the cost of health care today?
The cost of health care today, if I had to just make an estimate, conservative estimate, $23 million.
And that is pretty close to what I had.
Okay.
So $23 million, a 2% savings on $23 million certainly is going to pay for $19,850.
What they calculated to be the 2% is based on you utilize the family plans, because naturally they're the only ones that have dependents. So it would be somewhat less than that. Let's say if it was 2%, it would actually be $128,000. They feel they estimate that on an average they find 36.
So basically what this is going to do is it's going to determine if we have been assessed premium for a family plan when it should have in fact been an individual plan.
That is correct.
And how far back is this audit going?
It'll be a current audit. It will be a current audit from the point that the contract's awarded, based on all the phases. Like, there's a phase where they get information, work with the personnel department. It will be an added task to the personnel in doing that. They will also, from that point, then they will send out the forms and they'll ask for documentation. Then when they get that information back, they will analyze it. And they'll give us a list.
And these discrepancies that I would say is fair to assume are going to be discovered, where's the accountability for this? Is, I would doubt that the city is saying, hey, charge me for a family plan, we're only getting a single. I'm sure that's not occurring. So this must be an administrative error on the part of the healthcare provider, where they're billing us for a family plan when it should have been an individual plan.
I think that would be a possibility, but I think it would be more likely that we would have a child on a plan that is over the age 26. Now, going back, I would say that also they still might need a family plan, but when you're self-insured, then those are claims that you're paying that you shouldn't. So there is that would be one reason. Another findings could be a person, a retiree that is a spouse of an actual employee that may be passed on and didn't notify the city at all. That could be a possibility of finding, I think, as well.
So in my world, the private sector, we monitor those things, you know, in our own company, and we make sure that we're not paying for a family plan when we should be paying for a single. We make sure that we don't have dependents on there that we shouldn't have. And there's individuals in the company that are responsible for doing that overview. Mm-hmm. Do we have such an overview here in the city that watches out for that?
We do. I think we have about 1,500 actually enrolled family and individual. We're only looking at family plans, which is probably about 880. But we do monitor that, and we monitor that with our billing system as well. And not only that, twice a year we have an aging list. So we look at people who had no claims. That to us is makes us look at them and say, well, why don't they have any claims? Let's say a deceased person that we weren't notified that the person deceased. That would have to be a spouse of a retiree, or it could be even an active person. So those are the type of things that mm-hmm. we think might be missing. I feel confident that our process that we do in personnel to check on this is very accurate, but there are ones that we know could possibly be out there, and it would be in a situation where a retiree spouse passed away. That could very well be. I think that's where the findings will be. We've done several different things. We've done the aging that we will do twice a year, look at anybody that doesn't have a claim. Then we also last year sent out, we actually used an age data and sent letters out to have people respond back to us to ensure that we had data correctly, but actually it was a part of the healthcare audit we were doing. So we do have in-house, we do tie out to our billing and everything, but we can't rule out that there would be a possibility of savings. And I think this is a very, very important step to take, as you mentioned as well, that this here, we're hoping, I would love to say we could find no one, but if we do find them, it will more than pay for what the cost of this is. And I think it's worth doing at least the once. We find out that this is something maybe we'll do every 3 years.
I absolutely think it's worthwhile doing, and I do support this completely. So have you ever done a questionnaire to the employees asking, you know, probably similar questions to what this will do?
We did it in a small version, like I said about the age. We kind of picked an age and we did it, so we were actually looking at healthcare. We have thought of that to do. It's, you know, it does take a lot of time to even do what we have already, and even doing this audit will expand hours for the personnel department. We'll do whatever we need, but it does take extra hours to do it, and we have thought of doing one for everyone, but it is time consuming. But certainly,
if you can save 2% on $23 million, it's worth a few hours.
Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, Gene, so let's assume that number is somewhat accurate. They discover that we've been overbilled 2% on $23 million. How are we getting our money back?
Well, if it's a difference of a single and a family plan, then the I believe the health insurance will go back 3 months.
Say that again.
I believe they'll go back 3 months. Our health care.
The health care will only go back. Why won't
they
go back for the?
There's
whole year?
A minimum on it. That's
why?
There's a minimum. They will not go back any further than that.
Why won't they?
That's part of their agreement.
As part of their agreement?
Yes.
That if they make the mistake,
well,
and they overcharge us?
If they made the mistake, that would be one thing. But we have to do the enrollment. We have to drop them. So if we're not notified to drop that retirees, that spouse passed away, I don't think we can hold them accountable.
I understand that. If for some reason it was overlooked on our end, that's one thing. I mean, that happens. It does. It wouldn't shock me if, you know, someone's son or daughter went from 25 to 26 and, oh, we forgot to notify the city. That wouldn't shock me. I mean, how many people would even think of
we
doing that,
right? We
would
certainly challenge
so
anything.
That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is, you know, the insurance provider. You know, those folks that are so easily have their hands out, you know, to take our monies. If it is determined that they have made the miscalculations charging us for family plan versus a single plan,
we would challenge that certainly that's okay. Different altogether. We would
but
certainly
did
challenge
you say
it.
That we could only go back 3 months
on our if it's a fault of our part that
no not our
the
part
change.
their part
I don't know. I don't know of any thing. I think we would just go and challenge it and try to get our money back. Absolutely.
I would certainly think so. I think it's a good thing. Councilman McAllister.
The recommendation is for Part D advisors out of Michigan for $19,850.
Yes, thank you. I agree with the chairman that this is very important. This is another new initiative looking for savings. With a line item of $23 million, we want to be making sure that we're only paying for eligible participants on the city's health care plan. So I think this is a very wise investment. Again, if we get the 2% back, that's 2%. That's taxpayers' money. This is big numbers, and this is very important audit and review, and I would like to see it continue. So I'm very pleased that we're, again, being proactive and looking at these things. Thank you.
So that brings us to another question. Because most of the employees in the city that we're talking about, they pay 20% copay towards their health care. And if it is determined that we have been overcharged by the health care provider, that also means that the employee who's contributing 20% has been overcharged. So that brings me to question two. How does that get corrected? Why? Because what would be troubling to me is if, in fact, whatever this number is, and I would guess it's going to be a number, whatever that number is, that the employees who have contributed 20% of the cost of their health care, they've overpaid. They put more money out for health care than they should have on an average. And for it to just go back, whatever that number is, $10,000, we'll just pick a number, to go back into the general fund, and the employees are also picking up part of the tab, are not being considered, would be troubling. So how is that going to work?
I think there would be, if that was something we found out, it certainly would be an adjustment. But the likelihood of someone paying for more, and one of our active employees paying for a family plan rather than an individual plan, it's not going to be as likely as I kind of, they keep a good hand on that. They're not going to be paying more than what they need to. And furthermore, that is part of what personnel does as far as their plan. The co-pays and everything are determined by whether family or individual. And I'd be pretty sure that the employee would come forward a lot earlier than.
But it's something we need to keep an eye
We've actually for. Had we've had a situation like that where the employee wanted like either way, family plan or was no longer married or something of that event. That's when you have that 3-month thing with the. We will only adjust for what is determined to be allowed.
Okay. Any other questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Sir. And once again, just state your name for the record, please.
My name is Rick Casella. I'm a resident of Warwick. Just listening to this conversation about the healthcare stuff, a couple things pop out, and it seems to me that your questions just are going in a cyclical way, but it seems to me that the onus is on the receiver of the health insurance to notify the human resources department that there has been a change in the family structure. So I can't see where you might think that money might be going back to the receiver of the insurance for an overcharge when the overcharge was not the fault of the provider, but rather a misstep in the human resources calculations as to how things change. And I think your idea of having some kind of a quarterly update, some kind of a review or some way that you can say, listen, you receive your insurance through the city, and we require on a quarterly basis that you give us a breakdown of what your current family structure is and your needs. That way, if we do find out that we were being overcharged, we only going back those 3 months, because I don't blame the provider for only giving you 3 months because you didn't monitor the makeup of the family structures that you're paying for. So not to disparage you, I know you work very hard, but there's got to be somebody in human resources that can pay attention. You said, what, 15,000 families are affected? Or 800, how many, 1,500? 880 families, I mean, you could call two families a day and do the whole thing in one day. Or every day for a year. It can be done. It just seems like you guys are talking about how much it costs and who made the mistake and who paid who, when really the bottom line is we made a mistake and we have to correct it. And I think whatever action you take now, but paying an auditor to tell us that we overpaid, I don't understand that either. We seem to use auditors all the time to tell us how to do our jobs. And in my opinion, I think that the auditor is important for us to get accurate numbers, I'm sure. But if this is a regular function of human resources to keep track of where the money's going and who we're paying for, then we shouldn't have to pay auditors ever. We should just make sure that we provide the people that work in human resources the training necessary so that they can do those audits. I mean, it sounds like the auditors, you call the family and say, how many people are still alive? Because we're only paying for one or two, depends on how many you have here. So if you could just give us that information. I'm sure the people that work for the city appreciate, you can hear me, trust me. I'm sure the people that work for the city can appreciate the quality healthcare coverage, but I'm sure they don't want to see the city pay too much for it. So just ask them. And if they don't tell you or they don't inform you, then there should be some kind of way that we can, you know, force that issue. If they don't report on their quarterly deadline, then we get on the phone and we call them and say, if you don't report, we have to assume that you no longer need the insurance, period. If I don't pay my car taxes, I'm done. I can't do anything. There are consequences when you don't pay attention, and people have to stop paying attention, period. That's all I have to say. But I appreciate all your effort, really. I don't mean
thank you. Let me clarify what I said. So what I said was that I had asked the question, if we do our own internal work, I suggested that we do some sort of a questionnaire. And what I said was, if the provider of the insurance has overcharged us, I want to be reimbursed. That's what I said. If the employee had, for whatever reason, not notified the department of a change in their status and dependence, etc., of course not. I'm not looking for the provider of the coverage to reimburse us for something that is a household job. It's something we should be monitoring. And it's no different in the business world that I'm in. If I discover at some point in time that a vendor has overcharged me for something, yeah, I expect to get reimbursed for it. And if the insurance company is charging us for family plan when they should only be charging us for an individual plan, yeah, I expect to be reimbursed for it. Mm-hmm. If the error is because we weren't aware of the change, so be it. We got 3 months to do it. If you can't catch it in 3 months, then shame on us. That's what I said. Sir. Yes. And speak into the mic, please, because
you... I heard what you said.
Good. Okay.
And what I was saying is the provider is not the villain here. There is no situation that we can't monitor that would allow them to overcharge us. If we're being overcharged because we didn't do something, so to say if we're overcharged, obviously if we're overcharged, we want them to, but they'll admit it. They'll say to us, oh, we overcharged you. They're not going to say, but if we're not counting the people, they're going to say, well, this is what you gave us. So to suggest that we're getting beat up by the provider is incorrect. It's definitely an in-house thing. That's all I was saying, and not trying to challenge you, but your whole idea of we want them to pay, we can't keep blaming the big guy. Sometimes it comes back home and we got to deal with it at the local level instead of thinking that we're getting stuck by everybody when we're not. We're just missing something and it needs to be improved, and I know you'll get to it because you're a good man. Thank you.
Any other questions from members of the public? Any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, I need a motion. We have a motion favorable. I'll second it. All in favor? Aye. Aye. Thank you.
Thank you, Council.
Need a motion for acceptance of the minutes?
Favorable.
We have a motion. I'll second it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. PCR 17-19, resolution relative to bids. We'll move on to PCR 18-20, resolution relative to abatements.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman.
Good evening.
Members of the Finance Committee, members of the Council. This month we have abatements.
State your name for the record, please.
Thank you. Neil Dupuy, Director of Assessing. This month we have abatements in the amount of $7,955.59. And I'll take any questions that you might have.
Okay, Neil, talk to us about the big one, $4,043.81.
So this is a property in the Farm, Forest, and Open Space program.
It's what, please?
Farm, Forest, and Open Space. There's a state program.
Oh, I thought you said aerospace. I was say, what?
No, it's a program that offers a reduced tax assessment for property that remains in the program for 15 years or more, and they promise not to develop the property. So this was a new property owner that purchased the property. One of the first things we do when there's a tax appeal filed is we go out and do an inspection of the property. And in this case, there's a rather large barn, about 3,000 square feet. But the data that the city had on record was that there was an apartment in 3,000 square feet of the building. In truth, only a small apartment, 587 square feet, exists. The rest of the building is just simply a barn. So this $4,000 adjustment was reflective of that.
Okay, any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, and need a motion.
I move favorable action.
I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you.
PCO 17. -19, ordinance relative to senior and veteran exemptions. That is not drafted. I'm going to hold that until March 9th. Need a motion to hold till March 9th.
I make a motion to hold to March 9th.
We have a motion to hold. We have a second. I second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. PCR 4-20, abatement number 10669 and 10670.
Good evening. Neil Dupuy, Director of Assessing. We're going to ask that we continue this abatement until the March 9th meeting. Peter Clark, and the assistant solicitor, had some surgery on his knee, and he couldn't be available for tonight.
Any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, need a motion.
Make a motion to hold to March 9th.
I'll second the motion at the request of the sponsor to hold till March 9th, you said?
Correct.
Okay. PCR 8-20, formerly 2019-066, repairs to existing Plymouth vehicle exhaust.
Chairman,
sir? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Thank you. Chief?
Jason Omenauer, Assistant Chief of the Fire Department. This is a fire department seeking a 612 alteration of contract for bid 2019-066, repairs to an existing Plymouth vehicle exhaust removal system. Seeking an increase of the award of the spending authority for $8,000. There's no change in the contract terms. It's a two-year contract that expires August 26, 2020.
So, Chief, I noticed an email from you as I was basically pulling in the parking lot. Was that pertaining to this item?
It is, and I can explain that if you'd like.
Talk to me.
So there was a little bit of confusion. I wasn't able to present the last meeting. The ask here is to authorize the $8,000 to continue to repair the existing systems that we have through the end of the contract. That's about $8,000 from what we can estimate. We spent about $9,900 over the first 9 months of this year, and we've got about 7 months left, so we're estimating about $8,000 that we need to repair. There is a plan in place to mitigate these costs. As the chief, I believe, alluded to in the last meeting, There's a magnetic system that would replace the air-driven compressing bladder system that attaches to the vehicles. Those systems are about $3,800 a piece. So we don't have the budgeted funds this year in order to do those upgrades, and I don't believe it's in the scope of the bid right now to do those upgrades. The scope of the bid was just to repair and adjust the existing system. So what the intent of this was to ask for $8,000 to get us to the end of this contract period. And then when we put this out to bid again, probably in the summertime, well before the August deadline, to include the replacement and upgrade for that new system, and then evaluate as these things need repair, evaluate if it's better fiscally to make a minor repair or to replace it with the new system that would then mitigate the future costs.
And I believe at the previous meeting, I had asked if you had done an analysis of these various systems that you have and coming up with a hard number for the $8,000. And had you done that?
Yeah, it's about $3,788 per drop was the estimation. We have about 36 drops in our 9 fire stations, so you're talking $136,000.
No. If we did it all one time. I'm talking about the 8,000 chains that you're asking to extend this to do repairs on the existing, not the future stuff. I had asked if you had done an evaluation of the current equipment you have to come up with the number that you need.
Okay. No, the equipment that we now have right now is full functioning. We call them out as more of a break and repair. So as they break, that's when we call them out. I mean, there's not really a way to tell if the bladder, that air-filled bladder, is going to rupture or a hose is going to split at any point. We're just going off an estimation that we spend about $1,000 a month on it, and we're just about out of money right now. We've got 7 months left.
And how are you progressing with the review for this new technology you're talking about?
The vendor has recommended a product like we were talking about, that 3788. We have seen it, and he's sent us a report on where it's been deployed in other places around the Boston area. And most of those departments seem very happy with the system. It has mitigated their repair costs. It does function just as well, if not better, than the existing systems. We recommend that going forward, but like I said earlier, I think it would be prudent to put that specification into the bid itself, and then when we go to rebid it, and then budget funds to do those upgrades as those drops start to break, we repair them with the upgraded one and not replace it with the old air bladder system.
Chief, are there any grants that could be available, not so much for the 8,000, but for the new technology you're talking about? I know you guys are, you're pretty aggressive, on chasing down grants and finding them and so forth. Do you have any knowledge of any grants that may be available for that?
Yeah, we do have a grant committee. I would say most definitely this system is relatively old in comparison, and most of the grants that were awarded by FEMA and by the federal government are on the age of the existing systems. So I can bring it to our grant committee to see if they can put it in. They have a long timeline of things that need to be replaced. SCBAs and vehicles and radios and other stuff that they have drawn out for the next couple of years. But since this is a smaller number in comparison to our normal grants, they may be able to squeeze this into as like a micro grant, they call them.
Good. Yeah, it'd be good if you could look into that.
Sure.
Any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the public? Do I have any questions from members of the public? Hearing none, need a motion. I'll second that. We have a motion for favorable. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. PCR 1120, a resolution relative to repairs to damage at Lippitt Park. Is anyone coming to the podium? Is anyone from DPW coming to the podium to talk about PCR 11-20, resolution relative to repairs to damage at Lippitt Park? Director Salitro, are you coming to the mic?
I'm sorry, Councilman, I missed that.
No, that's fine. Just bear with me 1 minute. So, Director, as you know, I have several items that we have on the calendar this evening that I docketed for various things that I've been requesting to get taken care of. Some couple of months old, some as long as a year old. And they haven't been taken care of. This particular item right here, this damage at Lippert Park, this is something that apparently a vehicle lost control for whatever reason, drove through these 6x6 posts that are supposed to keep cars and SUVs, et cetera, from going into that area. Also damaged a couple of the bike holder things. One of them bent over quite a bit, the other one bent over a lot, and it's creating a safety issue over there, and it's creating a dangerous situation for anyone that is going to that particular area. I have, not just on that item, I have a file folder here full of emails that I have sent off regarding that location, pictures, the concern that I have as an elected official in Ward 5 for the safety of the residents that live there. And this hasn't been addressed. We did, you did, somebody did, put up some stanchions and put a cone over one of the 6x6s that was damaged and part of it still sticking up out of the ground, which to this day is still sticking up. Well, I'll say to the weekend, because I didn't get by there today. But my point, Director, is that these items, this list of items that I've been requesting to get done, for whatever reason, haven't been getting done. And for whatever reason, I'm not getting responses to my emails, and I'm not getting replies to most of my emails. And that is not only concerning, it's extremely frustrating. Because as an elected official, when I make a request or I send it out via email or text, I would certainly hope that I have the right to expect a response, a reply, or an acknowledgement of even receiving such. So I know that there is concerns about bringing this to the floor. And I'm going to respect those concerns. But I would like to hear from you with regard to this particular one, and we can deal with each one individually. But out of this particular one, why you have not replied back to me about this issue and why it hasn't been addressed, at least to the degree that you can make the area safe. And I know at some point from November 17th, when I first brought it to your attention, to current time, someone has contacted DigSafe to get DigSafe over there, which is only required, by the way, if you're going to be digging with power augers or machinery equipment, et cetera. It's not required if you're going to just be cutting flush to the ground various items, but it certainly makes sense to have DigSafe go over there before any digging is done. So why isn't this particular area those simple things? Why are we here we are now going on 3 months and it hasn't been taken care of?
Matthew Salitro, Department of Public Works Director for the City of Warwick. So in fact, Councilman, this happened on 11-12-2019, we'll call it the incident at Lippitt Park, where an F-150 drove through the 6x6 posts and mangled, for lack of a better term, the bike racks that were out there. So as in this instance, as the same as Pontiac Park, which is located down off of Route 5, somebody went through and ruined a park. As we did over there, we're waiting for the insurance to come back. As of today, before this meeting, they still have not come back and give us the monetary reimbursement that we were seeking for the bike racks. So that would be the reason for this. I have correspondence going back and forth with the insurance company, which is Progressive Insurance, stating that they, in fact, do claim responsibility for it. They're kicking it up to their department, whoever administers the checks. Once we get that in, we will certainly go out there and rectify the situation. The bike racks, they're a little different. I'm not sure if we can get a good handle on where they were ordered, but we'll get something pretty comparable. So that's what I have to offer on Lippitt Park.
So unfortunately, Director, that certainly doesn't eliminate my frustration, because insurance companies require the insured to take appropriate action to eliminate or significantly reduce any further damage or liability.
Correct.
Right. Just like if you have a roof leak and you file a claim, it doesn't mean you let the roof continue to leak until the insurance company decides to get over there and do whatever they're going to do and then award you a settlement. As a matter of fact, you will have a major problem getting compensated for that claim if that were to occur, because you can't document what the damage was then versus what it is today.
Correct, unless I'm mistaken, we're not talking about a roof here. We're talking about an accident that occurred.
Okay,
so my documentation is thus. I have pictures before and after, okay?
As
I've taken the appropriate action to seal off the area. I put a cone over the 6x6, okay? And furthermore, I work for the mayor of the city of Warwick. Any administration and dealings, you need to go through him, as does every other councilman in the city. Okay.
Oh, so I need to make the request to the mayor
If you'd like me to read this, this is Article 2 of the mayor, Chief Executive Officer of the Administrating Officer. The mayor shall be the Chief Executive and Administration Officer of the city and shall be responsible for the administration and management of all offices, departments, and agencies, except otherwise provided by the city charter. So that means that the administration dictates what gets done and where.
So you're suggesting that someone other than yourself says whether something gets done or not, or doesn't get done?
No, I'm saying is, with my resources, I will look at it and say, is this an emergency? I don't feel that bike racks in the middle of winter on an ocean front is an emergency. I, in my opinion, and I could be wrong, feel that the place is cordoned off, has a barrier on it, and has cones.
So
once the insurance money comes in, we will address it.
Fine. So you're leaving that area in an unsafe
net. I don't feel that it's unsafe.
You don't feel it's unsafe. What you have is, you have a cone that any six-year-old can go over and take that cone off, instead of taking the responsibility to make it level with the ground. It's a simple Sawzall. It's a five-minute repair to make sure that my constituents are safe in that area. Those bike racks. I got the email from the mayor. You're asking about the, contact the mayor. I've got emails in here that included the mayor on that issue, seeing as you brought it up. I did not bring that up.
Correct.
And what you have is a bike rack, and don't minimize it by saying, we don't use the bikes in the winter. I don't care if you don't use the bike rack at all. What I care about is that bike rack is bent down into an area, into a manner that somebody could get hurt on that bike rack. Some young kid, some senior citizen in between could get hurt because it's not lit at all or well lit. And it's a simple five-minute thing to go over there with a Sawzall and cut it off and make it level to the ground or bury it 6 inches. But that hasn't been done. That hasn't been done.
Correct.
And I wasn't particularly going to expound on this issue to this degree, but you're the one that brought it up. And the insurance company doesn't care about when they get there to do whatever they're going to do. What they do care about is that you, I say you, I'm generalizing, it could be me, it could be anybody sitting in this room, do their due diligence to act in a responsible manner to make sure that this particular claim doesn't progress into something more serious. That particular claim could progress into something more serious.
In your opinion.
In my opinion, that's
right.
In your
opinion, yes.
That's right. And I'm the councilman in that ward, and my constituents come to me, and they ask me to make that particular area safe for them. For them, for their children, and anyone else going through that area.
Correct.
Yes. And to say that my request, in my opinion, is unreasonable.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Because it's taking 5 minutes to go there and cut down a six by six.
Right.
That is dangerous. Yeah. That's my opinion. To send someone over there that's going to take 10 minutes to cut down that bike rack and make it safe and eliminate the potential for any other damage, is that unreasonable? No. But that's just my opinion. It's also my constituents' opinion that live in that area. So my question at this point now is, do you intend to send anyone over there and take that six by six, make it level to the ground, and to cut those bike racks down level to the ground and eliminate the possibility of anyone getting injured or increasing the claim to the city? Why would you not want to do that?
I will consider it.
You will consider it. What does that mean?
Just what I said. I'll consider it. Do you not know what consider it means?
So you may do it, you may not do it.
Correct.
Okay. Fine. So I'll be sure to advise my constituents that you're going
Thank
to consider
you.
It.
Thank you.
You're going to consider making that area safe
Correct.
So they don't get injured.
Thank you.
Thank you for the consideration. Any questions from members of the committee? Any questions from members of the council? Any questions from members of the council? Sir. Councilman Sinapi.
New spot. Why is this before us on a resolution? This seems remarkably inappropriate.
I'm sorry?
This seems like the wrong setting for this. And I think I've voiced this to you prior.
Perhaps you feel it's the wrong setting. I feel it's an appropriate setting.
Right. So now each councilman should drag the various departments up before the mic to castigate them whenever they don't get something done in a fashion that they believe they should have it done.
Councilman Sinapi, I'm not going to suggest or tell you or any of my colleagues how to protect your ward or how to represent your ward. You do that any way you please. That is up to you. How I choose to protect my constituents and take care of my ward is up to me. And when I go this length of time and I'm not getting replies to my emails and I'm not getting replies to my texts and I'm not getting simple things like this done, then, yeah, this is the next forum.
All right. Your choice, while it may be, still seems rather inappropriate, both
Thank
by
you.
Subjectively and objectively.
Appreciate your opinion, and you're certainly free to handle things in your ward as you so choose. Councilman Ricks.
I'd just like to say briefly that... I feel like it is entirely appropriate to ask questions on the floor if less formal methods of getting answers to the questions are not successful. I remember, while I haven't had much difficulty at all with getting requests through, getting responses to the vast majority of my issues when it comes to the current administration, I do recall that with the former administration, there was a series of potholes on one particular street in my ward, and I must have sent a dozen emails over the course of about 9 months. We're talking spring, summer, and fall turning into winter, and those potholes just were not getting filled. And so I think that, you know, in a situation like that, certainly, and I do recall taking that question to the floor, so it's absolutely a tool that the city council can use when we feel like the response isn't there as to less formal approaches. Similarly, there is a member of the administration who is due to present a quarterly report who has been unresponsive to my emails regarding an issue in their department, and I'm not going to hesitate to ask them the question that I've been emailing them multiple times over the last, I want to say, 6 weeks. So this is a tool that we on the council have, because while the informal method is always preferable, we have a duty to represent our constituents and get answers for our constituents. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. So it goes to the point that yeah, sure, there's an easier way to do things, simpler way to do them, and that's just do them. Or at least give me the courtesy of a reply as to what the reason is. I'm not an unreasonable person. I understand there's reasons for certain things. And I also understand the reasons for not doing things. Any other questions from members of the public? Any other questions from members of the public? So, Director, based upon the way this conversation went on this item, excuse me, I think we will visit the others, because I'd like to know what the reason is for those for not being done. So what I'm going to do on this one is I'm going to make a motion to hold until February 24th so that we can come back here and see what your consideration was.
Thank you.
Make a motion to hold until February 24th.
Second.
We have a motion, we have a second. All in favor? Aye. Resolution to DPW that signage be erected as stated in PCR 14419. I'm going to make a motion on that one to also hold till February 24th.
I'll second the motion to hold to February 24th.
We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. PCR 15-20, a resolution relative to school bonding consideration for the 2020 ballot. Thank you, Director.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not drafted.
I believe there's two, correct?
Yeah. Yes. This one here, I make a motion to hold until February 24th. Yes, February 24th.
I second the motion to hold it February 24th.
We have a motion, we have a second. All in favor? Aye. Thank you.